light.
Already done investigations into some Arizona UFO cases. Alejandro's own radio program, formerly known as UFO Think Tank, has been renamed Open Mind Radio. Alejandro's radio broadcasts are always informative and fun. I hope you will all give his program a good listen. Alejandro is one of those types of researchers that I love to sit back and talk shop with, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back as a guest to Eye to the Sky. Welcome back, Alejandro.
Hello, thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're able to join us here tonight. Would you like to tell everybody a little bit more about Open Minds and Open Minds Radio?
Sure, yeah. I've been doing, like you said, the UFO Think Tank Radio for a few months, and now luckily I'm on the UFO Paranormal Network also, which is great because I get to be with some long shows such as yours here. And I have moved. I was actually hired to go work here in Tempe, Arizona for Open Minds Productions. And this is a gentleman who essentially started up a company. He has several companies, so luckily he can afford to do this kind of thing. But started up a company where he's going to have me with my radio show. We're having a magazine. He actually got Maurizio Baiada. That's someone I like to say in my show. I love to say his name, Maurizio Baiada. He's from Italy, and he used to do a great magazine called Area 51 that was all on UFOs out in Italy. And it was a very popular magazine out there, and just beautiful. It looks great. Unfortunately, I don't read Italian, so I assume the content was good as well, but it always looked wonderful. So we've hired him to do the Open Minds magazine, and hopefully we'll have our first edition out in the next couple months here. We're going to try a couple different ways. We're going to do print and digital, so you'll be able to pay for it and download it. Or we've also got a great distribution company where you should see it in, like, your popular bookstores here by the end of the year as well. So we'll see which does well. I think you, of course, the money guys are a little worried getting into print media since print media is struggling right now. However, really we think that this magazine is so great. I think it's going to do very well. We've also got a researcher, Antonio Junez, who just joined the team, too, and he's been working on UFOs investigation for decades and writing for many different publications as well. So he'll be one of our writers. We've also got Paula Harris, who used to work with Maurizio on the Area 51. He's a researcher who's written some stories. We've got Richard Dolan has written for us. So we've got a lot of great writers and some wonderful stories that are going to be in there. And then we're also working on TV. So we've got a video producer. He worked for Entertainment Tonight, and we're going to have some video content on the Internet as well as hopefully in the near future here a television show that we hope to get on cable television.
That's something I'm looking forward to, both the magazine and the video productions that you guys are going to be doing. When we were talking last night and you were telling me all this, I was getting really excited about it.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Oh, yes. And David said to tell you we are going to hold you, excuse me, and we're going to hold you to your invitation to check out your facility.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because another thing we did is we bought Wendell Stevens' library, his archives. Wendell has kind of put out there, I think I heard about it a year ago, where he said, you know, he's ready to sell his archives or at least get it to an investigative organization or a library that can preserve it for others to use in the future, since, you know, he's getting up there in age and isn't doing as much investigation really anymore, so he wanted to make sure his incredible archives were preserved, and so we bought those, and we've got them in a library ourselves, and there are lots of rumors over what has happened with them, and whether they fell into the government's hands or something, But we actually have them, so it'd be great for you guys to come out and you guys can peruse through those. We've got a full wall full of slides and photographs, and they're just absolutely amazing.
Oh, that's something I could sink my teeth into. I'm into hard print, you know. I can only read for so long on a computer screen before my eyes start going crazy on me. But you stick printed media in front of me, and I'm into it.
Yeah.
I mean, just having all of that there is so amazing. Can you kind of give us a little bit of a hint of maybe some of the video productions you might be working on?
Yeah, you know, some of the normal stories, I guess a couple of stories that are kind of, we want to surprise people, and really cool ones, so some real cool stuff that way coming up that will be new and groundbreaking type of work, but we also have some stuff. One of the things that I think it would be cool and that we want to do is, you know, a lot of governments have been releasing their files, and one story we want to do is to have those ufologists from those fields or from those countries that are releasing files come and talk about those files, because, you know, I haven't seen where people from these different countries have all been able to come and sit down and talk and discuss why the files have been released in their countries, what that means, how the public has feels about the, you know, in these individual companies about those files being released. And then also, you know, have a couple Americans and ask the question why they think, you know, America hasn't done that. And if they think America, for instance, is being pressured to do so. Those are the kind of questions that I think will be a lot of fun to have everybody on one type, you know, well-produced segment all about that. I'm excited about that one. And then another one we want to do is on media, for instance, the movies, Larry King, ABC, you know, all been focusing on UFOs and ETs and UFO visitations. Of course, District 9 was huge. We have this new movie, which unfortunately seems to be kind of like, well, and a lot of people feel like that, but a more of a horror movie based around abductions and abduction research. So we want to do a story with maybe not the normal people that you would see talking about this and talking about why it's happening and having their unique perspective on that. So those are a couple stories that we've worked on, and then I'm doing some more long-term research into a couple other cases, including an Arizona possible UFO crash case, which we've talked about.
Oh, yes, definitely. We'll go into that here in a moment. Right now, I've had several people private message me the same question. Do you have a release date yet for the first issue?
Yeah, right now we're looking at November.
Well, that's just around the corner.
Yeah, that's next month even. So, yeah, we that's our current goal. You know, this is our first issue. So the issue is written. A lot of incredible stories in there. Stories with, for instance, Van Daken and I can't remember some of the other really cool stories that I haven't talked about that are in there. But yeah, a lot of great stories in there, so I'm real excited to see it. And I haven't been able to read all the stories yet, so that's pretty exciting. So yeah, we're shooting for November. We have a website, openminds.tv. And there's not much there except for some pictures and my radio show right now. But we're working on that, and we need to release our website real quick here too. So, of course, some of you know I send out UFO news on a daily basis. So we're going to get that on the front page of our website. We're going to have blogs that all of our writers will contribute to on a regular basis. So I'll definitely be writing. Some people know I used to write for Examiner, but I'm saving all of my stories to put into our blog that you'll be able to read from our website. And we'll have our news there, and we'll have a lot more info. This is going to be a really cool website. So, you know, get out there right now and bookmark it, and be sure to visit it on a regular basis. And, in fact, we'll probably have it rolling in the next week or two here where we'll have all that cool info on it. And it'll definitely be a place that people will want to visit on a regular basis, because we'll have new info up there on a daily basis. So, yeah, we want to have that website ready prior to the magazine coming out. And then another cool thing that we'll be doing is we'll be at the conferences. You know, if you go to a UFO conference, we're most likely going to be there, and we're going to try to offer different services to UFO conferences to help them get the word out, such as AV services. We're probably going to be doing the AV for the Crash Conference coming up here next month in Las Vegas. And our goal is that's going to be kind of our beta test for doing live streaming, too. Of course, there'll be a cost associated to that, but, you know, some people live pretty far. For some reason, just cannot take the whole weekend off and take a vacation, so they'll be able to watch these talks live via stream over the Internet. So we'll be doing that as well, and we'll be offering that service to the conferences.
Oh, that's awesome. They did a German group did a similar situation for the X conference this last April, I think it was, and it was great. It was great being able to sit here in the comfort of my own home and listen to the speakers. I really enjoyed it. Are you guys going to be having any guest writers or editorials in the magazine?
Definitely. We will have editorials. And essentially, you know, we're taking material from anybody who wants to write. Anybody who has a story that they want to give us, you know, we're definitely, in fact, probably half of our stories will be from freelance writers. In fact, Maurizio, Antonio, and myself are the only on-staff writers. And Antonio and Maurizio paying more attention to the magazine. Otherwise, the rest of our writers are freelance. So, kind of a paper story type of freelancing thing. So, definitely, if people have some great stories out there, some investigations that they've done, we'll definitely be featuring things like that. In fact, hopefully real soon we'll have one from Jaime Muzan in our magazine, possibly the first issue, if he could get it to us in time, we'll have an article from him as well.
Oh, interesting. I've seen some of his work, and I have to admit, some of the stuff he comes up with in his video presentations are really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of people have different opinions about him, but, you know, we even talk to him, and, you know, of course he gets criticized all the time for not doing enough investigation. And he says, you know what, that's not what I do. I don't have time. And he is a, for instance, here's an example with Jaime. We went to dinner with him the other day, Luca di Beppo, and if you've ever been to this Italian restaurant, when they walk you through the kitchen. Well, you should have seen the faces on the guys in the kitchen, the chefs. They saw him, and they were like, oh, my gosh, you know. And so sure enough, they come over because, and they asked first, the waitress asked if it was okay, and they said sure, and they came over and took pictures with him and got his signatures, because he's famous. He's like Dan Rather. You know, he is a big news anchor. He's on their 60 Minutes television program. So I don't think it's difficult for us to grasp that over here in the United States, I think, just how big and famous that he is over there in Mexico. So, you know, and he gets this all the time. He's a celebrity in Mexico. In fact, that's one of the reasons he wants to do more work in the United States, because it's hard for him because, you know, he's just like any celebrity. He's got a lot of people wanting to take pictures and signatures and everything wherever he goes. So, you know, to just think of someone at that level to also take on the UFO subject. If that happened here, that would just be huge. So he has, if you've worked in broadcast, you know, radio or news, it's a timeline. You have a timeline or a deadline of every day. So it's all, enough he can do it to collect all of this information and to get it out there. And his thing is, you know, you do the investigation. He tries to investigate, but he just really doesn't have the time. So it leaves it up for others to do the investigations on the case. And, you know, there are a couple of cases that we talked to him about, one in particular, that some investigation was done, and it turned out to be something mundane. And he was excited. He gets it, you know, he would, if you can prove, even if something, one of his cases is not real, he's happy because someone's done the investigation. He wants the truth. He really does. He's just like the rest of us, searching for the truth. He's not a hoaxer. He's not into promoting hoaxes. He's into looking for the truth. And, you know, a lot of us are fooled sometimes. A lot of us, I'm sure, have had an instance where a video came out on YouTube and we were sure that it was real, and then later we found out that it wasn't real and we're a little disappointed, or and maybe we fought till the end and no, I don't believe it is. It's not real until more evidence came out to show that it wasn't. You know, that happens to everyone, so it certainly happens to him where he really believes in a case that turns out to be not real, just like the rest of us. So he's only human, right?
I agree. He is a journalist first and foremost. And, in my opinion, not everybody has the skills or the time to go and investigate the mass amounts of videotapes and reports that come into him. I mean, holy cow. I can just imagine how many videos and photographs he gets a week.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets a lot, you know, and that's great. We're working with him, and that's another story and some of the stuff to answer your question on the video that we'll have out there because, for instance, he has some video, and I was just looking at some a minute ago that, you know, we haven't seen here in the States that he's done on his shows out there. So we'll be releasing some of those videos as he sends them to us as well. So people might remember, and if you haven't seen this, this is a really cool one. I can't even remember what you would Google to look for it on YouTube. You can definitely find it on my old site, my UFO Think Tank. You may have seen this, Dee, where it was a video of what looked to be like your regular saucer kind of luminescent craft, and all of a sudden out of the side of it, these orbs, kind of just a few come out, and they kind of are zooming around in strange ways, and then it just seems to be like machine gunning them, just tons and tons of orbs coming out of the side.
Actually, yes, I
that?
Have. The first time he spoke at the X conference, I believe he referred to them as dragons. Is a nickname for him.
Yeah. Well, there's another one that was taken from a. I'm not sure if it's the same incident, just from a different angle, from a different person, or a different incident of the same thing, but another one like this, and it's pretty incredible. And you can see from this different angle these things shooting out and going in this kind of wave type of formation as they cruise out and they move in these really strange ways. Really cool video.
Oh, actually, now I know the exact one you're speaking about. Yes, I have seen that one. That was quite interesting. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
It's nothing like I've ever seen anywhere.
Yeah.
And the first time I met Jaime, he was wearing a NASCAR jacket. And for those, you know, who know me, I'm a big NASCAR fan. And, you know, I had to stop and ask him who his favorite driver was. And I'm proud to say he roots for the same guy I do, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Oh, I'm sorry. I just had to add that in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's cool. It's cool to have something in common.
Well, it just proves that he's, you know, just like everybody else, has interest both inside and outside of ufology.
Yeah.
Getting back to the work that you and Mauricio are doing, aside from the Area 51 magazine and now the new magazine, does Mauricio do any investigative work himself, or does he just publish his story?
Oh, yeah. He does a lot of great investigative work. He has done some pretty incredible investigations. And so he's got some very unique investigations. For example, Colonel Corso, when he went out to Italy, because some people, I don't know if they know this, but Colonel Corso, one of his duties in World War II was literally when they, when they liberated Italy and Rome, Colonel Corso was in charge of Rome. He was literally the guy in charge of Rome while the United States occupied it in World War II after they liberated it. So he spent a lot of time in Italy and in Rome. And so he spent some time after he wrote his book with Maurizio and Paola and others in Italy, and they got a lot of really incredible interviews. In fact, Colonel Corso had his own notes from his experiences, and it was from these notes that the original book, Day After Roswell, was written. However, these notes only touched on a few of the different aspects of what he had experienced and what he had felt about what was going on. So they took his original notes, and these are, you know, just his pure notes, and no book about them referencing, it's just his pure notes. And they made this book called A Dawning of a New Age. And unfortunately, you can only get it in Italian. I think that actually Jaime was going to have it printed in Spanish, and I'm not sure if he did or not. But I've been able to look at a transcript of the American version of this, or not the version, but the an American translation of the Italian book. And they're pretty incredible notes, pretty neat stuff. So, and he's got a lot of original interviews with Colonel Corso, things like that. And then just a number of other great cases that he's looked into. So luckily, some of these have not seen the light of day yet. Some of them have only been shown in Italian, so he'll be sharing a lot of that in the magazine as well.
Oh, I'll be looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, you know, if you wanted to get him as a guest, he's a really interesting guy. He's got a fairly heavy accent, but I think he's understandable. I never have problems understanding what he's talking about.
I've met Mauricio a couple of times, and I had no difficulty at all.
He's
a very nice, personable kind of guy. You know, you start talking with him, and no problem.
Right. Yeah, he's a neat guy. It's a lot of fun.
You know, I this is a question I ask a lot of people that are into this. What got you started into the subject of UFOs?
Mm-hmm. Originally, you know, as a kid, and I've always been interested in sci-fi, and I was into math and science. In fact, my first college major was engineering because I wanted to be a rocket scientist, you know, literally. So I was, but at the same time, you know, I've had my family's from Southern Colorado and New Mexico, and my roots go back to like the Utes and the Pueblo Indians. So I've always been into that as well. And so I've always been into the Native American myths and philosophies. And of course, there's lots of stories, and even in the Mexican culture, there's lots of stories about witches and ghosts and just more of an openness to the unknown. And I've always held on to that, you know, having an open mind. So that's why I've always been into this stuff. I used to always watch the TV shows. Funny enough, I changed my major from engineering to journalism. And so I was a news hound. I used to just, you know, have my nose buried in the news, what was going on a regular basis. And what really got me to devote, you know, the majority of my life and time to UFOs was the Disclosure Project. When I saw, as someone that felt I had a good hold on what the media was about, and very disillusioned, you know, when I figured out, you know, how everything really works and how it's around, mostly around money. When I saw that the Disclosure, when he held, when Stephen Greer held his press conference in 2001, with all of those incredible whistleblowers, with all of the media being there, and then seeing that that did not hit the news, you know, like a hammer, like Stephenville did, I knew that there were things, there were stories that were even above money-making. There were reasons, there was a process here where this sort of information was not getting out to the media. So then I started looking for alternative sources of information, all of this stuff, started reading books like crazy. I really became a hermit and started studying and researching. And, of course, at that time, most of the outlets I used were conventional media outlets for UFO stories. So when I looked it further and found, you know, even right now, people may feel that, you know, like I felt at the time, I watch all of the UFO documentaries, so I know what's going on with UFOs. Well, as you know, 80% of this field, if not more, is not even presented in the best of the UFO documentaries out there. There's so much information. The best, most credible, legitimate information in this field does not make it to the public, which is really unfortunate. So after diving into this for a long time, I decided, you know, I wanted to become a MUFON investigator, talk to these people who had sightings and get an idea of what they were seeing and how credible they are. I was very skeptical at the time of the whole abduction scenario. However, being an investigator for a period of time, I started running into and working with more and more alleged abductees, and I then started to have my own personal experiences. The majority of the times when I'm hanging out with people who allege to see UFOs a lot and allege to be abductees, and sure enough, I would have a sighting with them. And so that's really how I got started.
That's interesting. I'm kind of like you in the same boat. You know, I'm a sci-fi fan, and I was a 10-year-old kid, got a hold of Frank Edwards' book, Flying Saucer, Serious Business, and I was hooked.
I had a
question that was posted in the chat room by Gossamer777. He says, "Gee, it's cool. They are doing some Arizona investigations, but will they also be doing investigations outside of Arizona?"
Oh, yeah. The majority are outside of Arizona. I just, you know, I decided one of the first things I wanted to look into was what I was hoping to be a little bit of low-hanging fruit, you know, something in the area that would be simple. And in Frank Scully's book, Behind the Flying Saucers, the same book that made Aztec popular, and this book came out in 1950, so even before, of course, after Roswell happened, but before Roswell was popular, but right in the middle of kind of the heat of all of this, where it was taken more seriously. And in that book, he talks about a crash in northern Phoenix area in a Cave Creek. So I decided, you know, there's got to be some people in the area who know about that. So I'm gonna look more into that because I haven't heard much about it. So that's why I looked into that one. But definitely, we'll be doing cases globally, I mean, we're going to be all over the world looking into different cases. Already have had sent people out to Mexico, to Chile, and Argentina. We're definitely planning a trip to England because we want to do a little bit of work on crop circles. So, yeah, most of our stories will be outside of Arizona.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be truly international.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we've got Antonio Hunez, who has traveled around the world. He speaks 5 different languages. He's done research with researchers all around the world. We've got Maurizio as well, who from Italy, who spent a lot of time going around Europe doing talks and doing stories. So, yeah, we definitely have a very international focus.
Oh, and David asked a good one. He wanted to know if there was going to be anything from E.J. Desard.
Oh, we definitely, when I was talking earlier about the international, you know, release of UFO files by different governments, we definitely want to include him in that conversation because, as people may know, Adre Gavard and his UFO group were pinnacle in getting Brazil to release some of their UFO files from their military.
As you know, going through reading a lot of books that are now out of print, most notably one by Coral Lorenzen, which for some silly reason that the name of the book escapes me at the moment. But through that whole book, she was convinced that the UFOs were getting ready to do an invasion. And several of the stories that she relates in the book center around Brazil and different incidences that happened over Brazilian military installations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brazil's had some interesting things happen, and a lot of people felt that there may be some sort of underwater base out there for extraterrestrials, but they've also had a couple of scary incidences out there, too. So Brazil's definitely been some sort of a hot spot.
That's for quite some. Well, all over South America, actually. South America and Central America. One thing that David and I had been looking into was the relation between UFO sightings and a possible ley line connection. And I was just wondering if by chance you were aware that there is a big major grid connection where 12 different ley lines come together just south of Tucson.
Oh, really? South of Tucson? I wasn't aware of that. I heard something similar about Sedona, that there's lots of ley lines that connect there. But, yeah, I think that would be interesting to follow. You know, that Frank Scully book that I referred to earlier, the scientists had talked about these magnetic waves and these kind of, they didn't call them ley lines, but similar waves of magnetism that go throughout the planet. And they believe that that had a lot to do with where UFOs were and how they worked, and that's why. So, and of course, in the Frank Scully book, the two main witnesses were debunked, and they were even thrown in jail soon after that book because they were, there seemed to be some pretty strong evidence that they were con artists. So it's kind of hard. At the same time, there also seems to be some pretty strong evidence that at least one of them had some real legitimate information about UFO crashes that the military had been involved with. So, and Frank Scully said that the second person, Silas Newton, was his name, or there's a different guy also, that those weren't the only people, that the witnesses he had were various, you know, scientists. It wasn't just those two. So he said, you know, maybe if those guys were con artists, then, you know, the things that the other people told me have panned out. So, you know, that's interesting, too. I'd love to investigate more around magnetism, because in 1950, if they felt they had an understanding of how these things work, or at least, you know, the types of mechanisms they used, even if they were too advanced for us to reproduce them, I wonder how far they've gotten now.
Oh, gosh. That would be very hard to answer, to tell you the truth. Even if Roswell was the first incident of a crash or the government getting a hold of one of these craft, which personally I think we had one further back than that,
mm-hmm.
you know, gosh, they've had over 60 years to go through it. You know, I'm kind of wondering just exactly how much technology that we use every day now has come from that kind of a source. We have another question in here from Dimensional Star, who is also the host of the program that comes on after this one called Voice of the People, November Hansen. She would like to know, so why does Alejandro like to do this type of research? Does he see an end game or just further understanding? And has he had his own experiences?
Cool. I'm glad you asked me, because I'm in the chat as Open Minds Radio, and I saw that question, and I was like, cool, that's a neat question. I do. You know, it's not just for personal research. I do see an end game, even if it's subtle. I feel that, you know, there's an awakening. I personally feel that, you know, we're extremely pragmatic in America. In fact, we are the inventors of pragmatism. Literally, that's one of our major contributions to philosophy. And that has worked for us in scientific arenas, because we're so careful, because we're so rigorous, because we need proof and true understanding before accepting anything, we've been able to advance our science tremendously, because, you know, that rigorous work helps you with solid discoveries and understanding, which then allow us to build devices and things that to help us with our technology. However, one of the things that I think we've lost is that openness. We've become very egotistical, very self-oriented, I think, and one of the things we've lost is the true mystery. I think that, you know, so many people are so cynical and almost depressed, because it's like, you know, if this is everything, it's almost like, you know, because of the overwhelming bureaucracy and living in that kind of 1984 world, that people don't seem to really have a lot of purpose in their lives except for their jobs and to make money and then, you know, keep up with the Joneses. I think that opening our minds to the mysteries of what's out there, I really, you know, there are a lot of people, and these are some of my favorite ufologists, if you can call it that, although sometimes they frustrate people. In Native American cultures, the trickster served that purpose. The trickster was this entity or this idea, if you don't believe he was real, which I think he probably was real. And the trickster's purpose was to come in and do things that were crazy, which you could not understand, supernatural, appear out of nowhere, the skinwalker, change into different creatures, all of this type of things that to show, I think, you know, and its purpose was to humble people. In fact, there's a trickster day that they used to have in I forget which Native American culture, and the chief would need to act like he's crazy for the day. He would do crazy things, roll on the ground, roll in manure, and people would laugh at him and throw things at him. And it's just humbling where the chief, who's the number one all every other day, is humbled, and now the people get to do whatever they want to the chief without getting in trouble. And I think that's really important. So we have a true understanding of where we are in our reality, that we're not the top dogs, that there's a lot that we do not understand, and we need to appreciate and respect nature and the universe. And I think that all of these mysteries that we as, which it's just a kind of a pragmatic shaman, we in the paranormal research are bringing these things to the people to keep their minds open, to make them understand that there is more going on, to hopefully give them a wider perspective and a more realistic, and how I feel realistic, and a more wondrous view of our existence, that we are, you know, something special, and that we can do more than what we're told we can do. I believe, you know, we do have these sort of psychic abilities. We have more control over our reality than we believe. And that the world can be much more wondrous and beautiful than just this box that we kind of paint ourselves into. And that's what I feel that this sort of research serves, because that's kind of the, you know, what the shaman does. He's the guy who keeps the people in tune with alternate realities and dimensions and the other side of the veil, and I think that's what we do. And I think that's a vital purpose. Now, the question is, are we coming to a point where we're going to have a wider understanding? People are talking about things like awakenings, talking about 2012 moving into a different arena where instantly we're going to have possibly psychic abilities, or we'll have an interface with all of our cosmic community. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I hope it does. I really do. But I've worked with a lot of guys who have been in this field for decades. I've worked closely, of course, with Dr. Leo Sprinkle. I was recently a director with MUFON, so I was working with John Trusler and Robert Wood. And these guys have been in here for decades. And they've all felt, you know, talked about how, you know, when Jimmy Carter came to office, they thought disclosure was going to happen. Reagan came to office, and he had a couple of his sightings. And in the behind the scenes, people knew he was interested in UFOs. So is disclosure going to happen there? They, throughout their lives, just like we're doing, think disclosure's around the corner, and it never came. So they're thinking, wow, you know, is it going to happen? They're a little more skeptical about it happening immediately. I don't know. I hope it does. But either way, I think having a wider understanding of our world is important. And I think we're coming to that.
I have a follow-up question from November. She asks if you feel one case just stands out, or are they an accumulation to provide understanding to a bigger picture?
Is there one case that stands out?
Or is there an accumulation of cases?
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I think definitely an accumulation, no doubt. I think that one of the problems that we have right now, and another problem with our society, another thing when you're talking about Native American or even Eastern philosophies, is that they're just that, philosophies. In Asia, they didn't even have a word for religion. You know, that's a word that we had. These were philosophies. And I think it's important that we have philosophies and we have our own personal philosophies. If you look at Asia, with Hinduism or even Buddhism or some of the other major religions, they're not dogmatic in that you have to believe this way. They're different philosophies, and everybody thinks differently. And you're allowed to do what you know your own thing. There's just trends, you know, similarities throughout these things. So one of the things that we do often is we look for the authority who can give us all the answers. And we have these people who seem to be contactees and abductees, and they get messages. And maybe some of these guys are real. I know with some of these abductees where they've got some physical evidence, and it seems like they are a legitimate case. And they're getting messages, and then they're sharing those messages. And people have a tendency to say, wow, this guy sounds right on. This is the person I'm going to listen to, and I'm going to listen to everything they have to say, and what they have to say is my reality. But one thing you find in this field is almost like these guys are all tricksters. None of them are saying the same thing. You know, everybody has a different version of the story. Maybe the stories get very similar, but they're still different. And that, I think, makes it dangerous for and to follow any one case or to make one case, you know, more important than others and to create your own personal reality. I think we need to take all of this information and create our own realities while also seeking, you know, what we can prove to be truth. But I think it is an accumulation, much more so. And it's scary to me when people, for instance, let's just, not picking on any one case, but let's take a popular one, Billy Meyer. And it's scary to me when people are saying, you know, Billy Meyer says this, Billy Meyer says that. This is the reality of what's going on. And you ask them, well, have you heard what so-and-so said? Have you heard what this person has said or that person has said? And they say, I've never heard of them. You know, they haven't done enough research to look into all the other messages that are coming out there from people who seem to be just as, if arguably not more legitimate. So definitely an accumulation.
I agree with that. That not just any one case in particular can do these, you know, tell all, know all incidents. But like, you know, when you're bringing up the Native American stories of the different philosophies. I like your terminology, philosophy instead of religion. I have finished reading recently Eric von Däniken's new book, History is Wrong, and I'm in the middle of reading Graham Hancock's Fingerprint of the Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just blown away by all this information coming through from ancient cultures from literally all over the planet that does point to what Graham Hancock is called, referring to as a third party, as the origins for civilization in a distant past. Do you kind of ascribe to an ancient astronaut connection as well?
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I know David, Hancock talks more of kind of a etherical third party that is not a physical third party, but I think there is a lot of physical evidence for, you know, a physical third party. But yeah, with so much history and so much, I personally, you know, it seems that, and I think this is unfortunate, and it's always been a frustration for me throughout my, especially when I was younger in college and stuff like that. Seems that Western civilization seems to take Native people's stories and giggle and think how cute, what a cute little story, and put no credence behind them at all. I don't feel that way. When you have Mayans, when you have Navajo, Lakota, Hopi, you know, you have all of these, and even in Africa or Australia, you have all of these indigenous people talking about their connections with the star people, and people from that come from the sky and being taught all of this wisdom and knowledge. Quetzalcoatl taught them how to grow corn and grow other, you know, harvests and stuff like that. So if I think it, that leads to there was some sort of interaction there. I don't, you know, I put some credence to those stories. So much of our UFO research deals with anecdotal evidence, and it's difficult to get physical evidence, but I definitely put, just like I put credence behind all the myriad of witness testimony regarding UFOs, I do as well in those ancient indigenous stories. And if they were interacting with them thousands of years ago when these stories were written, I mean, you even have in India the Vimanas and just all across the world these stories of these interactions. And I think it would make sense then that there was an interaction. I know in one of Andonikan's, I think in Chariots of the Gods, but it's also in the ancient astronaut videos that were done in search of, that Rod Serling had done a couple early movies before he passed away, and they started the series with Leonard Nimoy. But they had talked about some scientists, some Nobel Prize-winning scientists, who felt they had discovered that our DNA does not fit with the planet, that our DNA is not similar to other animals on the planet, and that there's no way it could have developed as far as it has in such a short period of time, kind of that missing link type of area. And they believe that our DNA was either seeded here or that there was something happened, probably, you know, some manipulation or interaction between something from some foreign DNA, probably from another planet. I mean, that's what these scientists believed way back in the 70s, which for me was a long time ago.
Well, yeah, for myself as well. you know, it was, some of the stuff I've been reading in these books, and of course I've read pretty much all of von Däniken's books, and I have to say there's definitely something behind the idea. And at that note, we have to go to a break, and we'll be back here in, I believe, 9 to 10 minutes of break time. And we'll be back with Alejandro Rojas here on Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis. Now here's your host, DeAndrew.
And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, also broadcast live on UDRN 105.5 New Orleans. I'm your host, DeAndrew, and tonight my guest is Alejandro Rojas. Alejandro, during the break, we were kind of discussing a little bit the ancient astronaut theory, and you pointed out to me something interesting that Graham Hancock meant by the third party origin of civilization, and I think that's pretty fascinating. Could you kind of like recount that a little bit for our listeners?
About the which the Graham Hancock.
Yes.
Oh, about his feeling of well, at least in the UFO Congress, where he had talked about the experiences being related to a chemical in the brain, and I think he, in particular, the pituitary, that it affects. What is it? I can't remember the DH. Three letters starting with a D. I remember. But he had felt that, when I was talking about the non-physical, that he felt when shamans took different drugs that had activated this and brought them DMT, someone wrote it in the chat, took them to another dimension and in these alternate dimensions, that's where they would interface with these third parties and bring back their wisdom to share, but all in a non-physical type of way. And he believes that perhaps abductees, for instance, are having out-of-body experiences as opposed to physical experiences, perhaps having an increase of DMT during those times that those are happening. So, interesting stuff, although I think especially abductions are a physical in nature, because I think, one, I've personally seen enough evidence to show me that.
Okay, that's cool. November has another question. She always comes up with some really good ones. She would like me to ask you, what do you think the public's role should be in advancing the case for UFO contact studies?
The public, you know, a lot of people in this field get really frustrated because the public isn't doing more. I know in MUFON, for instance, you know, a lot of people criticize MUFON. Of course, I had to deal with that a lot as their spokesperson. And people don't realize there aren't many resources. They think that MUFON is this great big organization that can get anything done, but there's not, you know. Most people are working 40-plus hours a day. You know, America, I think we just passed up Japan as the country where people work the most hours out of any other country. And so people are really busy, so they don't have a lot of time. And so people in MUFON would get frustrated. You know, why aren't there more people who volunteer to do this and that? So although I can see, you know, a lot of people are working. You know, they have kids. They don't have the time to devote to this. In fact, I've noticed, maybe you have, a lot of the people who do devote time to this field, interesting enough, are retirees because they've got a lot more time finally to get involved with this stuff. So I think just having a wider perspective is enough. I think just understanding the world, that there is more going on, is a big step. I think supporting by listening to or viewing or subscribing to magazines and services that are getting this sort of information out is very important, and supporting those people who are getting information out. Hopefully, you know, the media sees that, and I think they do, and then they try to get more of this information out as well. Now, one thing that happens with the media is that they will try to get their cake and eat it too. So in other words, if, let's say, ABC, which is they're known for, if you watch an ABC special on ETs or abduction or anything, what they're going to do is hype you up, tell you, ooh, we're going to have this special on ETs and abductions, you're going to see amazing stuff. They'll have their special, and at the end, they'll have their debunkers who debunk everything. And see, that works perfect for them because they get the viewership from the people who want to see this stuff. At the same time, they debunk it so they don't have to answer any hard questions. You know, if they were to take it serious, then people would be coming to them and saying, what? You mean you say UFOs are real, or you think people are really being abducted? And they don't want to have to deal with any of that. So they make it easy for themselves. However, the more people who take this stuff serious and watch this stuff, then the more they see that groups that take this stuff seriously and who are willing to put their neck on the line and say, yes, we believe we have enough evidence to say this is real, then the more willing they're going to be to do that, because they know that that will help get viewership. So I think that's at least what people can do. And, of course, you know, going to meetings is a great way. If it's not MUFON, for instance, in the Phoenix area, I know I found there are three different UFO groups. There's MUFON, who brings people to talk. There's another one. And then there's a third that's more centered around people discussing amongst each other, you know, what they've found and everything, so, which is really cool. So I was just reading a post here that was pretty neat. Advancement of retired persons researching UFOs. I think David wrote that. Pretty funny. But, so there's lots of outlets for people to get more information, and just supporting those outlets is a lot of help.
Yeah, I agree with that. For example, you know, I do 40 hours a week job. David has a job that here this coming week he's going to have 60 hours of overtime. Excuse me, 50 hours of work in, and it doesn't leave a lot of time to do a lot. I agree. You know, the average person doesn't have a lot of extra time that they can devote to studying UFOs or abductions or whatever, or what have you. Kind of moving on a little bit, I kind of want to let people know a little bit more about you looking into this incident that happened at Cave Creek back in the 40s. Personally, I think it's an interesting incident that you're digging into, and any help that David and I can do, you know, we'll do. But you know, getting it out to the public like this, you might, you know, who knows? Somebody out there might be listening that might have the key to it all.
Yeah, that would be, you know, that's where a lot of things happen, is witnesses coming forward from hearing things about stuff like this. But yeah, the Cave Creek is a really cool one. Essentially, you know, I talked about Frank Scully's book Behind the Flying Saucers. He said that he had heard from, you know, what his sources, that there were four crashes, and one of them was in Cave Creek. Well, he called it actually Paradise Valley, and I got to let people know that seems like there's kind of three names for this incident hanging around out there. There's the Paradise Valley crash, the Cave Creek crash, or the Dreamy Draw crash. Those are kind of the three things people have labeled it, and all of this has got a little mixed up. So, because it's actually not Paradise Valley. It's Cave Creek, which is fairly close. It's pretty close, but a little way out of the way in a kind of a mining area. Anyway, so he wrote about it. Since, you know, researchers have really gotten into the Aztec New Mexico crash, which was in his book, and a lot of people were skeptical because immediately after Frank Scully had written his book, True Magazine had talked about his main witnesses being con artists, and seemingly had proved that, so much so that the police even threw him in jail for a period of time. So they seemed to be con artists. But Frank Scully's argument was that they weren't his only informants. And since then, especially a person, you know, well, Wendell Stevens and another gentleman, Steinman, had written a book on Aztec. Some other people had done some research. I know Bill Moore did some research, who was one of the Roswell researchers. He really felt that the two gentlemen were con men. But someone who I think has done some incredible research, and I can't wait till he finishes his book, is Scott Ramsey. He's done a lot of work into the Aztec case. And he started to find that a lot of the things coming from the supposed con artists were credible. He found they talked about these radar stations in New Mexico that caused the crashes, and he found these abandoned radar stations. He found a strange location that had certain properties that were described in the book that were possibly where the Aztec crash had happened. And the more he started looking into this, the more he started finding credible information supporting that really happened. So, and others have done some research showing that maybe Frank Scully's book was accurate. In fact, you know, Frank Scully, the name Scully is who Chris Carter used when he named his character Scully in The X-Files, funny enough. But later on, Timothy Good wrote a book called Above Top Secret, and he looked into this Paradise Valley crash case, and he found a witness named Selman Graves. Selman, a respectable businessman, says that he was going to go rabbit hunting with his friend on the mountain which has Gojack Mine in the Cave Creek area. And his buddy said we shouldn't go to this certain area because he had been out early in the morning and seen some military guys there. Well, of course, his buddies were like, well, what's there? You know, let's go check it out. So they go to check it out. Some military guys, I guess, asked them some questions and told them to stay out of the area. But they went up on this mountain where they could get a look down onto this area. And this was in 1948, by the way. And what they said they saw was this large flying saucer, essentially, a dome in this kind of wash area. It was the size of a house. And they didn't even know what it was. You know, they were looking at it. It was really strange. They couldn't figure out what the heck this thing was. The military was around. They were messing with it. They eventually put a tent up. These guys stayed there from, like, 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. before they left. Later on, Selman said they had seen them carry this thing out in four parts and drive off with it. And then eventually there was a rumor that some of the debris, that area was dug out and then deposited in this area called Jimmy Drott Dam, and then they built this dam and they covered it up. I went out to the dam because, you know, it's got this rumor, this history of the UFOs. A lot of people write that there was a UFO buried there, and some people had written that there is no use for that dam. So we went out and we interviewed and talked to the park ranger who works this Dreamy Draw Dam, and sure enough, you know, it does serve a purpose. In fact, he's got pictures of the parking lot being flooded. So that area does get flooded, and the dam holds back that water from going into some neighborhoods below it. So it wasn't made for any purpose. So I'm not sure if the dam there really served any or had any role in this incident. But later on, Selman Graves talked to someone at MUFON, and I'm not sure who yet, and I'm trying to figure that out. They interviewed him they videotaped an interview of him. It looks like it's on VHS, and there's a small part of this interview on YouTube. So you can see what he looks like and stuff like that. I know George Parks, the MUFON director, remembers having him come and speak, and George Parks was involved with a public access television show that he spoke on, so I'm looking for more people because I'm trying to find out exactly, you know, the spot where this supposedly happened. Because another thing that Selman Graves said is they moved Cave Creek Road a little bit to the east to go around this crash area. So one of the things that you and David, of course, were helping me with yesterday and I've been looking into is finding some maps of that area to see if indeed that road had been moved during that period of time. I've got maps for 1949 for that area, but I can't find anything earlier because there was nothing in that area. There were mines, but those mines had been abandoned, so there was nothing there, so there's no reason to take any aerial photography or really pay attention to that area. So prior to 1949, it wasn't considered. Now it's kind of considered part of the Phoenix metro area. But it wasn't back then, so I haven't been able to find the map. So it's interesting. You have this one credible witness, and you have the Frank Scully book stories, and I'm hoping to find more on that, but that's all I've got so far. And Ryan Witt, I know, is pushing me because he said, hurry, you can get something together quick enough, you know, you can come tell us at the craft conference. But I don't think I'm going to have anything ready by then, but maybe next year. But I'm going to keep looking into it, that's for sure.
David just printed up a short list for me of possible UFO crashes here in the state of Arizona. And at the top of the list is the Cave Creek Dreamy Draw, the October 2nd of 48, saying that also that there was the remains of two aliens described as 4.5 feet tall were recovered. They were supposedly kept in a residence freezer for a while and then taken away by the military. Also, not only does it mention the flood control dam there at Dreamy Draw as a reason to bury the UFO and hide it, it also claims that somewhere in the area, in the same area, that there's a large underground vault somewhere around the Dreamy Draw Dam. Another crash in April of 1953 in southwest Arizona, May of 53 near Kingman, according to this, people were taken in blacked out windowed, or the windows blacked out buses to a crash site where one body was recovered. And in December of 2002, an Air Force veteran claims to be one of the men that was sent out there. Let's see, another one in October of 66 in northwest Arizona. July of 73 in northwest Arizona, where supposedly five bodies were recovered. On June of 77 in northwest Arizona, and again, five bodies recovered. And the last one, strangely enough, is fairly recent. In June of 96 near Pinedale, Arizona, multiple witnesses had seen a white light falling out of the sky and breaking into three balls of light and crashing into the forest. So there's a lot of Arizona cases there to go looking into.
Yeah. Some of them, I looked into some of those different Dreamy Draw stories, and I just really couldn't find anything. And I even contacted a couple people who had posted, I heard this or I heard that. And they didn't know where they heard it from, and they thought that it was in Frank Scully's book. So it's a lot of people, you know, saying they think they heard this, and their memory just wasn't accurate from the book. But like you said when you started earlier, Frank Scully's book, it did talk about there being two bodies that were found. One was dead inside. One was halfway out. Selman Graves, the witness, didn't say he saw any bodies. But something else that was interesting is that Frank Scully said that the scientists had said there were these three balls that were kind of tripods for this craft. And I can't remember exactly how it was. But anyway, in one configuration, these three balls under it, kind of like you see in some UFO pictures and stuff. Like, I know some of Billy Meyer's pictures have these weird balls in them. But in one configuration, you could just push the UFO over. But in a different configuration, it was like still, you could not budge the UFO. That somehow these still balls had a magnetic effect that would make the craft very stable.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, interesting. I think really interesting.
David wanted me to ask you if you've heard any rumors surrounding Fort Huachuca, Arizona.
Where?
Fort Huachuca.
No. See, I haven't been here too long, so, and I've mostly just looked into this Cave Creek thing, so I'm still learning about the mysteries of Arizona, but I'm more familiar with like the San Luis Valley in Colorado and Colorado and New Mexico stuff. But yeah, it seems like there's a lot of really interesting stuff that's happened out here.
Yeah,
the southwest and the four corners seems to be an important area.
You know, it makes me wonder, you know, that all these dates are post Roswell incident, and mentioning the four corners area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the possibility of all, like, say, like White Sands and Alamogordo and you know, all the nuclear testings and all the military installations and stuff in Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, if that's a bit of a draw for these objects?
It's an interesting question. It may be. I mean, I think there definitely is a correlation between nuclear sites and UFOs. On the Colorado-Nebraska border is where we have the majority of our nuclear missile silos, something like 500 of them buried out there, and also a lot in Wyoming. So possibly, someone in the chat said that Corso said it's a low-gravity area, so that's kind of an interesting theory, too. And then, like you said, there are a lot of underground bases and things like that. Of course, Los Alamos and Kirtland and Sandia Labs, which does a lot of very high-end military work. In fact, those are Kirtland and R&D for Space Command, and Space Command is headquartered in Colorado Springs in Colorado. But also, like you mentioned, there are Native American legends around the Four Corners. You know, if you look at the symbol of the with the white and the red and the yellow and the green, you know, that circle symbol that has a cross in the middle that you see, and lots of Native Americans have around and stuff.
Yes.
That supposedly, I've heard, represents the Four Corners. And I've heard from one Rainbow Eagle, who's going to be speaking at the Galactic Gathering in Denver in a couple weeks. He is really interesting. His job, he says he's the keeper of the teacher of the peace shield. And he's been given by many elders of different Native American tribes a lot of the information that they've had in the past. And his job, he was told, is to go start to share this now. So he goes across the country talking about this. A wonderful, wonderful person. And just so enlightening. So it's incredible, his talk. And he brings together that not only the Mayans have this calendar around 2012, that lots of Native cultures have these calendars. They're not all completely the same, as in, you know, they don't all have the same number of worlds. For instance, you know, moving from the fourth world to the fifth world or the second to the third. However, they all around 2012 were moving from one stage to a new stage, a lot of them. And that the Four Corners is an important area, and it's an area that it's important to migrate to around that period of time, because the transition is going to be easier in the Four Corners area. And now they can start to share that with their brothers from across the ocean, is the way he puts it. So they're European and they're white brothers, that now they can share this information. Because he says, you know, when the Europeans came, and a lot of the elders, the rule of thumb was they would ask, you know, have you heard from the star people? And when the Europeans said, what? Who are you talking about? Then they learned, uh-oh, I better clam up, because star people must not want to talk to them, so I'm not going to tell them about that. And they would do that with other legends, too, like the wild man, what we call a Sasquatch. Have you heard about the wild man? And the Europeans said, what the hell are you talking about? They would say, you know, never mind, just don't worry about that. So they had all of these secrets and these stories that they kept from their white brothers. And now it's time to go share that, because we're all one people, and, you know, everybody serves their purpose, and that we need to all take care of each other, and especially during this time as we transition. So really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's really sad that in the days of the conquistadors in Central America and South America, they were pretty vicious. Is the only terminology I can come up with, concerning the belief systems of the different native peoples that they crossed paths with. And,
yeah.
Of course, they had, the priests with them trying to convert the natives to Christianity. And in their zeal, they burned, oh, God, thousands of books and scrolls explaining the history and the culture and whatnot of all these different people. And it's so sad that we have lost all that. Who knows what we might learn if those weren't destroyed in such a brutal manner.
Yeah, one of my favorite, one of the things that I think about a lot is the library in Alexandria, one of the eighth wonders of the world that was destroyed and is no longer, and the knowledge that it was supposed to have had there, which was probably amazing. But hopefully there are some archives out there that will come to light. I know Tibetans have a lot of archives that they don't share because it's not the right time, although the Chinese have gone and burned and destroyed a lot of those. This Native American information that's coming out, though, at least your Rainbow Eagle and a couple others is very interesting and enlightening, so hopefully that can help. But I don't know. I like to think, I like to be non-material and believe that, hopefully that information is all stored in our common subconscious somewhere.
Oh, that would be wonderful, I've been pretty hooked on lately on the ancient astronaut connection here. I kind of sometimes go in cycles. I'll get into the ancient astronaut, and then I'll get into this aspect, or back and forth. Okay, I changed gears here. Since you've come to the Phoenix area, have you done much looking into the Phoenix Light incidents or interviewed many of the witnesses?
No, I haven't. I think Lynn Katai's documentary is excellent on the Phoenix Lights, and it's got so much information and covers so many of the witnesses that, I think hers is great. So I don't know. So I haven't really gotten into that, although I have talked to, and now both of their names completely elude me. I cannot remember their names. I'd have to look at my notes. But I've talked to the councilwoman and to one of the other main witnesses, but actually to ask them if they had information on Cave Creek and just to say hi and introduce myself, but they're the only two I've talked to, and I didn't really talk to them much about the Phoenix Lights themselves, but I certainly, because I walk my dog, all the time, I just will sometimes stand there looking up, thinking, imagining what it was like for people to be seeing those lights and seeing that huge chevron shape, silently coast above them.
That'd be interesting, if we could get a bunch of people here in the area to get together somewhere and do a sky watch.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm in Tempe, in the middle of a bunch of other metro areas, and we've got the mall and the highway and the university all here, so the sky, even in the middle of the night, I can't see a whole lot of stars. Luckily, Nikki Brown, you know, she's the one who runs the UFO Congress. She invited me out on her boat to go to Saguaro Lake, and that was spectacular. You know, we went out there and then floated around at night and got to see all the stars and the Milky Way, and that was beautiful. So, and I love sky watching, so I need to get out and do a lot more of that.
Well, it's a little town I lived in Idaho named Emmett. It was in a little valley that shielded it from a lot of the light pollution from Boise, Nampa, Caldwell, Meridian area. And, oh gosh, you could see the Milky Way and everything from there. And I've had a couple of sightings in that area myself. I was thinking, you know, if we could get a bunch of people and there's a park area at South Mountain. You know, from what I understand, there's still, oh, from time to time, you can see Phoenix lights show up. And it'd be interesting if we could get a bunch of people on the north side of South Mountain, facing north, to see if they could spot these lights. And to prove once and for all whether or not they're on the south side of South Mountain or on the north side.
Yeah, that would be cool. You know, when I went to the Dreamy Dry, I know they have some mountains there and it's a preserve. And the guy did say that they allow people to go skywatch there at night. So, yeah, it seems like a lot of really neat locations around. That would be wonderful. I'd love to do that.
Well, and from what I understand, between Cave Creek and, oh gosh, what's New River, which New River is just north of Cave Creek, for about the last 2 years, there have been a lot of sightings, during the day even, of large black triangular craft just hovering, just sitting there. So that would be interesting. Go out to that area and just, you know, observe.
Yeah, that would be incredible. And you know, one thing I've done, and I got to do more with it, I've just been busy on other stuff, is one of the first things I did, and I've always wanted to do this, I just haven't had the time, but since this is UFO research is my full-time job now, which is just so awesome. I have been downloading all of the sightings from the MUFON MS and from New Forks database and putting them in an Excel database because, you know, in my previous job I was really good with those. And I've created some pivot tables where I can reference all this data and make graphs. So, like, right now, with all the MUFON data, if you ask me, you know, how many triangle sightings there were in 2007 in Arizona, I can make a graph showing that, and it'll show if, you know, there were any spikes or anything like that. So, really cool data, and I've seen some interesting spikes here and there, and I need to look more into those incidents, which I will, and I'll start to write some stories on those and stuff. Because I have found, you know, there are spikes here and there, and it does seem to be some cycles here and there on different types of graphs and things.
Good, that would be interesting. I'd love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. We have about 8 minutes left. Is there anything, any projects or other projects rather that we haven't talked about that you'd like to let people know about?
Let's see. Not that I can think of. I know one thing. I think I've talked about all of our cool open mind stuff that's going on. Definitely if anybody has more information on Cave Creek, that would be really helpful. I guess looking at the chat, see if there's any questions there. Oh, Sky had mentioned Ed Grimsley. If anyone's heard from him lately, we haven't, but if people aren't familiar with Ed Grimsley, one thing that he did was get some night vision goggles and look up in the air with that and attach those to video cameras, and they've gotten some really cool stuff that way, and that's another thing we really want to do, and that's something that we'll have to make part of our Skywatches, because it seems that a lot of people are getting interesting things when they get a good pair of night vision goggles and attach those to their cameras. And I know you can get monoculars too, which is what works better for your camera. But I guess, you know, I had an interesting sighting the other night, walking my dog in the middle of the night. You know, like I said, you can't see many stars here, but there was a really bright, appeared to be a satellite, and I call it that because it was moved in one direction in a slow, steady pace. And I assumed it was the International Space Station, but it, when it got closer, it faded out. And I don't. Every time I've seen the space station, it's, you know, pretty consistent brightness throughout the sky. So that's kind of weird.
Well, that would depend on what time of night it was. The earlier in the evening, the longer you'd see it, you know, up there, you know, illuminated by the sun. But once it crosses the day-night meridian, I guess you could call it, and the sun doesn't hit it anymore, then, yeah, it would fade out like that.
Yeah. That's probably what it was. I forgot to look it up because I was tired.
there is an internet site. You'd have to Google it. It's called JTrack 3D that can give you times and locations of satellites and, you know, when they go overhead. So if you do see something like that, note your time and the date and look it up on JTrack, and it would tell you whether or not a satellite was overhead at that time.
JTrack? Yeah, I usually use Heavens Above. I hadn't heard of JTrack, but I'm going to check that one out. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
JTrack 3D.
David has sent a link to that in the chat room.
Cool.
And it's so long, I'm not going to even try to spit it out here over. But JTrack 3D, and you can Google that, and it'll take you right to that. You know, kind of getting back to the Phoenix Lights deal. Here, oh gosh, it'll be 3 years ago? Yeah, 3 years ago this month, David and I were checking out the location of when a couple had videotaped some interesting lights, strangely enough, not far from the football stadium where the Arizona Cardinals play. We went during the daytime to go check and see, you know, what could have possibly, you know, in the area could have done these lights, and then we went back during the evening to, you know, videotape the same area after dark. And on our way home, David was driving, and he goes, "What are those lights?" And I said, "What lights?" And he says, "The ones behind us." And I turned and looked out the back window of the pickup, and sure enough, there was these huge, bright orange lights. Fortunately, I had a video camera with me, and I was hollering at him, "Pull over, pull over." And we got pretty close to 3 minutes of video of these lights before they faded out one by one.
Cool.
It was pretty exciting. That's part of the reason why I say, you know, this is about the right time of year to be out skywatching for that. A lot of reports that I've heard have happened in September, off towards South Mountain.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I hadn't had a sighting until, you know, I was an investigator for quite a few years. And then my first sighting was in the San Luis Valley, where they see a lot of them at a place called the UFO Watchtower. And it was my first visit to the UFO Watchtower, and I had heard about it and just really hit it off with the owner, Judy Meseline, who's just a wonderful person, and we were just yapping away and all night long. But yeah, that night with my sister and my best friend, we all three saw this thing, so that was really cool.
Let's see, we have, about 2 minutes left. Would you like to mention the magazine and the website and
yeah,
the other little goodies again, so everybody has
yeah,
a fresh in their mind?
So check out openminds.tv. Go bookmark it and check it in about a week and a half. We'll have launched. Right now it looks neat, but there's not much information there, just my radio show. But we will have updates on there real soon. So right now, if you go to UFOthinkTank.com, you'll see news updates updated on a daily basis of all the UFOs in the news. Stories, and Britain especially is going UFO crazy. They have UFO sighting stories in their papers all the time. It's incredible. But and we'll have that moved over to openminds.tv real soon. We'll also have a blog from our great researchers and writers, and where we'll be posting some interesting stuff up, some cutting-edge hot news on a regular basis. And someone asked, what the hell is the creature? And some of you might know about Jaime Musson's Metepec creature, this strange thing that was found in Metepec, Mexico. And so far there's been some DNA tests, and they can't figure out what this thing is. It looks like a little thick carcass of a dead ET or something. But, yeah, that belongs to Open Mind. And so we're going to have that in the United States real soon here, and we're going to do some studies and give some stories on that. It's really hot. In fact, Monster Quest did a special on that little creature, and they couldn't figure out what it was either. So that's what that is. It does look really creepy, and it's not alive, though, so don't worry, David. It's not going to come get you. Maybe its family will, actually. But yeah, we'll have more information on that, so definitely keep an eye on that, because we may have, you know, a new species here, and we may even discover more about it sometime soon. So those are some things you can keep an eye on for openminds.tv, so definitely keep looking, and we're going to have some real cool stuff up there that you guys are going to love.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to it. And, you know, I envy you. You got a killer job. It sounds like a lot of fun. And unfortunately, we're out of time. 2 hours really goes by pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, I thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well,
for,
thank you.
Well, I appreciate coming on and talking with us tonight. And looking forward to your new show, Open Minds Radio. When's that going to be airing?
That airs on the UFO Paranormal Network. It's on Thursdays, 5 p.m. Central, or if you go listen to it live on Blog Top, I do it Thursdays when it's 3 p.m. Central. So then you can
awesome.
Join the chat there to talk live, and I'll try to join the chat at the either time. So, yep.
Thank you. Well, I better hurry up and get signed off before Joe gets all upset. We run a couple minutes over.
Okay.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And everyone in the chat room tonight, our virtual auditorium, thanks. You've all been a wonderful bunch. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Her guest tonight is author and filmmaker Brian Allen. Please join us again next Saturday on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis. But my guest will be researcher and artist Jim Nichols. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. And good night, everyone.